The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
TBR's Morning Drive. My name is Bill Sturgeon. I am at Taconic High School in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, in the Taconic High School studio. And I can't tell you how happy I am because everybody's excited. You know why? Only a couple of days left of school, and then I can remember that. I can't remember where I parked the car, but I can remember winding down the last days of school. I have with me someone today that you know how much I, if you've watched the show at all, how much I respect this guy, his integrity, his personality. He's for the people. He's not for himself. His first name is Senator. It's not really. But his first name is Senator Paul Mark from the wonderful Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Senator, it's a pleasure having you here.
It's amazing. This is the first time we've done this live in six years, I think.
Usually
in real life.
Just look at a blank and then they insert a picture. Yeah. Well, you know, why I wanted you to do this last show of the season for is because you're such a proponent of education.
That's true.
And an example of education. And I was watching some of these people as I was here the last time. I said, I got to get Senator Mark on because some of these people are going to be voting in 2 years.
Oh, wow. That's true.
Yeah. And you're a young guy. You're not one, you know, when you watch television, you go, oh, I got to be 80 to be a senator. No, they started.
In politics, I'm young. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was a compliment. But thank you so much for coming. And, as I was telling Mr. Choquette, the teacher here, he's a wonderful guy, wonderful. I mean, these kids are here way early to help.
Yeah.
But Mr. Choquette, I was saying, you've been a proponent for education and all the things associated. People don't realize you got to get the kids to school. All the busing and stuff you do for the rural communities, Paul, that's a credit to you.
Thank you. Well, thank you. And education is extremely important. Education is a path out of poverty. It certainly was for me. It wasn't a path to riches, but it's been a path to at least a steady job and a steady opportunity to have a better life. And, you know, that starts from a young age. And so just when I was a kid, I know I've said this a bunch of times, I went to multiple elementary schools and two junior highs even. And, you know, sometimes food was an issue, living situations were an issue. And so anything we can do to help support
exactly
the students, I mean, it's so important, and it shouldn't matter, you know, who your parents happen to be, where you were born, what your zip code is, and people around the state, because they don't realize there's so many rural communities.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, they really don't understand that rural poverty is a real thing as well. So thank you for saying that. Yeah, it's important.
I don't understand in some of these rural communities, the cost of education has gone up. Mm-hmm. You know, when I first started school, it was with the nuns in a Catholic school. And then, I don't know what they got paid, a buck a year or whatever, but, you know, it was pretty inexpensive. But then by the time my son was at St. Joseph's, it was in the thousands for each year. But what I think you've done, too, why you're an example to these kiddos here is, as I say in the Army, you have improvised and overcome.
Yes.
Really and truly, your story, you should write a book someday. I'm serious as a heart attack when I say that.
I have a good title for it.
What is it?
Mark My Words.
Oh! You've been thinking about it.
I got a great story, title and a great cover, but that's probably where it ends.
Well, you have a great story too, because you're not an anomaly. Maybe you thought you were when you were growing up, but I mean, I can, from my youth work with violent youthful offenders, some of them didn't take the path you took. They took another path.
Right.
But when you read their files, you kind of could understand it. You didn't approve of it, but you could understand how a 14-year-old would make a decision to do X.
Oh, absolutely. And while money was an issue, and there were times that we certainly struggled, I'm also extremely lucky that I had both of my parents. My father always had a job. It never paid anything, but he always had a job, and they both set a good example. My mother spent a lot of time trying to teach us, and they both were there and available for us. And I know not everybody has that luck to begin with. And then you throw in – there's also a lot of chance. And so if you just happen to run into the wrong person, or you happen to have a
– wrong group.
Or a physical predisposition towards – whatever you tried once and it actually took a hold of you, like, you know, that's nobody's fault. It's like there's a responsibility to try to help people and get them through situations that they face. But and sometimes when I talk about my story, I hope it never comes across as whiny, because it's not. It's just this was a reality, and I was lucky to overcome it. And what is it Wayne Gretzky said, I get a lot of lucky shots, and the more I practice, the luckier I get. You know, so there's a lot of work that goes into that level of luck. But still, if you don't catch those breaks, you don't get where you need to be.
You're a living example that you can overcome. I mean, some people, the weight becomes tremendous and they just give up.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there were days when you just said, you know, this ain't worth it, you know. But you're in politics now, and I will say this, so let me look at the camera. He's in politics, and he does a magnificent job. He's representing the people. I got to ask him this. He'll get mad at me. How many thousands of miles do you put on your car in a year?
It's easily.
I'm turning it into Al Gore about, you know.
It's easily 50,000 a year. And, yeah, I couldn't have, like, an electric car even if I wanted to, because of the amount of driving I do.
Unless you had a heck of an extension cord.
Yeah, exactly. right. I'd need a bunch of rechargeable batteries.
Golly.
Just the infrastructure's not available out in this area. But, yeah, no, it's definitely in the 50s. I was actually noting today that this car just hit 65,000 miles, which is great. It's only not that old. So
I'll be honest with you. When I saw the fog, when I was driving in the fog, and I knew the detours, I didn't know they were as extensive, but they're much better marked now than they were. And we have to attribute that to Mayor Marchetti, who was here last month, and we got some grief about being on the road that he lives on. What do you see the challenges for the state in this current federal administration?
Yeah, the challenge is the uncertainty. And so we just went through the budget process, and so there's a House version right now and a Senate version. And there's a lot of good things in both, but there's a worry that what's happening in Washington is so unpredictable, and they're working on their big, beautiful bill. And if they actually pass that bill, like, how much money will come out of programs, how much money will come out of our state funding stream? And so when you're trying to budget, whether it's at home or as the government or as a business, when you don't know what tomorrow's going to bring, it makes budgeting very challenging.
Yeah.
And as we always say on this program, the Massachusetts state budget is not like Washington. It has to be in balance. So we are going on the basis that we expect about a 2% revenue growth. And so what we're looking at is approximately $61
billion. Wow.
And that's a little bit more than last year. And we're still sitting on $8.1 billion in the stabilization, the rainy day fund. So we have a buffer. But I think I mentioned last time, out of $61 billion, 15 of that is federal.
Yeah.
And the majority of the federal money is actually healthcare related.
Ooh.
And that's one of the areas, they're talking a lot about potential cuts. So if we lose, you know, 40% of $15 billion and we're only sitting on $8 billion, like, we can do math. That's not a good situation.
You can do math. Yeah. My beautiful wife, the Polish princess, she does all the finances in the house.
Smart.
Last time I was doing the checkbook, they gave it to Massachusetts for the auditor's exam. If you could balance the book, you could be a, you know, an auditor. Balance the check. Yeah, and it is, right? It is kind of a I don't like to watch television because it gets me hyper. And I can't even imagine you guys and gals down there saying, well, we got to have this ball. What if they cut this? And, yeah. I mean, it has to have been a very – traumatic might be dramatic, but stressful time.
Stressful, yeah. And I compare it to 2020 where there was the start of the pandemic. There was a lot of uncertainty. We actually delayed the budget a few months because we didn't know what was going to happen. And we weathered that. I mean, in the end, we weathered everything. I was speaking at the Gibb Kittredge Awards in Dalton, and you know, it's a beautiful community celebration, and they give out awards to people that – the student of the year and the service volunteer of the year and all of that. And it felt like a good moment to talk about the CRA in Dalton, just as an example, has existed for 102 years. Uh-huh. And for 102 years, they weathered a depression.
Right.
Wars. War. Yeah, exactly. September 11th, Cold War, COVID, and, you know, we'll weather uncertainty right now, too. But it doesn't minimize that if you're one of the people that is losing a job because of what's going on federally, I look around, I hear the numbers, 240,000 federal workers lost a job, and I think about kids like myself that all of a sudden your parent loses that job that they've had for 10, 15 years. And depending on how old they are and what their training is, that was what caused us the problem, is it can be really hard to move into something else.
Yeah.
And so if you've been, I don't know what, a geological engineer for the federal government and suddenly you lose that job and you have to go work at McDonald's, like, you're going to be working, but you're not going to be putting your skills to use. You're not going to be serving the people
or drawing the salary.
And then
benefits.
Exactly,
too.
Exactly. So, and, you know.
You know, I mean, that's where, to my audience, that's where I think we should appreciate Senator Mark and all he's done through his time and all he's overcome. But more importantly, what he brings to the State House is humanity. Mm-hmm. He's not in it for Paul Mark, believe me. I know I've sent people to him, and he's helped them. After they've gotten a runaround, you know, I say, have you tried Senator Mark? And they've come to me, oh, he was wonderful, or his staff. And Casey, if you're out there and you're watching him, he's behaving.
he told me, Bill will meet you out front at 7:15. I said, tell him 7:25. Yeah. But I split the difference. I was here at 7:20.
Yeah, well, they had to get me up here in my escort because they're not going to let me alone in the school. They got a cafeteria. They got a, you know, a culinary arts program. I'll be down. I'll be 400 pounds by the time I left.
Oh, my God. Oh, God.
But it is a challenging time, and I think people, even on the local levels, because, you know, you get some from the feds, and then you disseminate it to the states, to the cities, I'm sorry. And they're all, well, like, juggling hand grenades.
Oh, yeah, this is that season, too. I just saw Pittsfield, I think, approved its budget the other day, and the towns are doing their town meeting, and most of them have already happened. A couple are happening this month. And, you know, the annual town meeting is the final authority in 55 of my towns. So they are dealing with their own struggles. They're trying to know how certain is the funding that they're getting. And then, you know, that affects your local property tax bill and all of that. So, everything that's happening has an impact all the way down to the local level. And then when you think about cuts, if federal cuts were happening because the point is to balance the budget, because there's a fear that the deficit is too big, you know, you can there's moments where, belt tightening is appropriate and you do it in a responsible way. But from everything I'm hearing, that's not the point of this, because the numbers I'm seeing – Even former allies are starting to speak out that, you know, this is going to be a very bad deficit situation. It is not creating a long-term fiscal – it's kind of the opposite of what we do in Massachusetts, that over the last 14 years, we've gone from, coming out of that great recession in 2008, 2009, from a stabilization account that was almost drained to having $8 billion. And the federal government seems to be instead trying to figure out, like, how high can we run up the credit card and make the very minimum payments before there's going to be some kind of a – someone at some point is going to get stuck with all of this, and they're going to have to do something about it because it is not infinitely sustainable.
I agree 100%. And it's also – you know, I hear all this talk about national security, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's true. I mean, if we go belly up, so to speak, what happens to – you know, and I have grandchildren – you know, I worry about that. I see these young people here. Yeah. But you're right. Somebody, at some point, somebody's going to have to sit down and say, guess what? Guess what?
Yeah. So it's going to happen. It's a matter of time.
You know, I mean, you don't have to be Einstein to figure that out. Because, but as we address these things, I just hope, because this is what I think you bring to politics, and I mean this as a compliment. The beard's got to go. But your mom just texted me, tell him get rid of the beard. It's going salt and pepper.
That's the thing. It's going to disappear on its own because it's blending into my skin.
You notice I shaved mine off. I was a trimming job one day, and, it didn't work out well. But when you do things that affect people, like, all right, you laid off all these people. What are you doing to help them now obtain new jobs, new positions, new careers? I have friends that worked for the federal government. Fortunately, they're all retired now, but they're saying, you know, God, I mean, to be some people who work overseas, they rent houses. Yeah. And you sign a lease for a year. Well, guess what? If you're stationed in Germany, they may not give you an out of the lease. So, I mean, there's so many ramifications, and you know them far better than I. But my heart goes out to some of those people. Mm-hmm. On the other side, some of the cuts I personally familiar with, I have no problem with.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is. In politics, in the legislature, in Congress, with the presidency, having a debate about policy and making better policies is a great idea. So,
absolutely.
I don't remember where I saw this stat, but someone said, well, you know, the Army doesn't have as many horses as it did in the 1860s either. Like, there's a point, like, you have to change tact. But if, let's say, the program that I know was here's a better one. A program that has local implications, AmeriCorps. AmeriCorps is domestic Peace Corps. It is people doing projects like the old Conservation Commission back in the Roosevelt days, you know, doing work here in the United States and in Massachusetts. And I've worked with them, like, volunteer days to help out at some of the local state forests. Like, they do good stuff. It gives young people a chance to get a first job or take one of those gap years.
Absolutely.
Excuse me. If you're going to either change or wind down that program, if there's a policy reason to do it, that we found this part of it is ineffective. We don't need as much time spent on, you know, mural painting, you know, whatever it might be. And instead we're going to have roadside trash pickup. Cool. Like, do that. Do it through the legal constitutional process and then try to find people that are now displaced, find them a different job because there is so much that could be done. And then it does trickle down because – in the Berkshire specifically, that Greenagers program lost a lot of money. Oh. And so I was able to get them a tiny bit. I mean, in the big picture, $50,000 in the state budget. But at least it's helping them get that lifeline to see what's next. And they've been doing great fundraising on
their own. They have wonderful. Give them, if you're in touch, give them my name. I'll have them on.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Because I'm a big believer in it. You know, I mean, the thing is, they're the future.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I hear all these people say the kids are our future. Well, what are you doing to help them?
Right.
Put your money where your mouth is. I mean, going back, this guy, He's always thinking of helping. And you've helped people. Like I said, I've referred people to you. Don't get mad at me for doing it. But, I mean, they call me. I say, hey, Bill, you got that guy, Paul Marca. Do you think he could help me? Yeah, I
try.
Think he could.
We at least try or try. Send you the right direction.
Yeah. But I think the challenge these times is, yes, we have a huge deficit that we have to address. I mean, you can't just say, oh, I don't see it. I mean, we've been doing that for 20 years. But the other side of it, too, is I got into a conversation with a person who said, why are we paying the salt taxes? and perhaps I could understand his point. Why are we paying New York and California, man? Why are we doing that? And I guess the thing is, I don't have a problem with where it is, but I have a problem of going up to, what is it, 40 grand?
Yes, I think that's the proposal.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But and if we have to tighten the nation's belt, maybe others need— You know, like in my case, I don't talk about belts because I can't tighten it. I'm at the last hole as it is, you know. But it's a tough time to be in politics.
Yeah.
It's challenging, not tough.
Challenging. Yeah. And I don't think there's ever an easy time. But I think you're right. It's especially demanding because whatever you think of what is going on in Washington and in this region, I'd say it's like 70% feel one way and 30% feel the other way.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's more like 50% feel strongly one way, 30% feel right. strongly the other way. And then there's 20% that
don't care.
Well, yeah, there's somewhere in between.
Yeah.
Even if they don't like it, but they don't maybe have every reaction every minute of the day. But they turn to us, and there's a lack of maybe general knowledge of exactly how the government works. And
wait.
Yeah, I know.
This is my surprise face.
There's different branches and levels of government for a reason, and especially if your title is senator, people think a lot of the time that maybe you're in Washington.
Yeah.
And so I get a lot of calls about like something's happening in California. And what can I do about it? And I say, you know, we can express our displeasure and we can prepare Massachusetts to
handle it.
Yeah, handle our own affairs, but like I can't. It's even to the level sometimes people ask, they think I have an instant hotline to say the Berkshire Eagle and I can and I can just call them and like opine and they're going to run that. And it's like it doesn't work that way.
I've tried that way. But I have to say the Judge Rutberg, and he said, call me Fred. Well, I've called you Judge for 50 years. I can't change right. now. I'm an old man. And Kevin Moran, I really do say they've given the Eagle a hometown feel.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, I lost faith in the Eagle when it was in the corporate world.
Yes.
But those guys have done a great job in all around. And like you said, when I call Kevin, he goes, oh, again? No, but how we got about 6 minutes. How are you going to approach this, you personally, when these cuts come? Because to me, that will help me understand that. I at least know somebody who's looking at it rationally and not – well, I don't mean this derogatory. Some people, they're party affiliates. So if the party says, let's all run and jump off the cliff, they all run and jump off the cliff.
Right.
I found that very hurting when you land because I used to be a party loyalist, but I've had to open my horizons.
Yeah, I'll say there's an intensity. So just as an – we'll use the last two presidents. There are people that no matter what Joe Biden did, it was the dumbest thing that ever happened.
Yeah.
And now, no matter what happens now, it is the worst thing comparable to pre-World War II Germany. And it's like,
right.
There are a lot of bad things happening, and Biden made a lot of mistakes too, of course. But like, there also has to be a rationality and a looking at it, at least at the state government level, that, well, we have to parse out what's real and what's not.
Yeah.
And when you throw in the internet, like now videos – people send me videos and it's like, that's none of that's real. That's all either edited or it's AI generated.
Yeah.
So people are seeing these things that aren't fact in any way and getting really worked up about them. So we can't, as a state government, we can't operate based on that. So
I agree.
For cuts specifically, at this moment, it's small cuts, but they're adding up and we're slowly but surely plugging the holes as they come. But there's that worry that when a big cut, if a big cut happens, it's going to be harder to, you know, smooth that out. And then you have to move into a situation of, it's not going to happen overnight, but how do we evaluate where we are and then decide what we're going to do? So just as an example, if there are significant cuts to Medicare and or Medicaid, and that trickles down to the state level, then does Massachusetts take on a tact of completely reforming that system, making it more efficient, maybe moving to a different model that most countries in the world use? Or, you know, do we just keep playing reactionary? Like there's moments where even a bad thing creates an opportunity that if you're forced to come up with a different approach, that sometimes it's a better approach. And unrelated to necessarily the federal government, but like the schools, I had a meeting on Monday with the people that are trying to work on regionalizing some of the rural communities.
Sure.
And there's a moment where if keeping these schools afloat is just not workable, that someone from the Boston level of the state government, not the legislature, but from the administration, is going to step in and force districts to do things. And we locally, we've been warning about this for at least 10 years and trying to come up with solutions, like whether it's the rural school aid or the regional school transportation, funding that comes here to gateway cities like Pittsfield. Like it all adds up, but you can only bandage something for so long before you have to change something in the longer term.
Yeah.
So.
And I think what you're saying is true. I think the time has come to say, well, we've always done it that way. Well, guess what? It doesn't work anymore. I mean, we got technology. I mean, I can remember when you had to stand up next to the wall to talk on somebody, you bring in a chair from the dining room to sit down if it would. But we're getting ready to go into a break. I'm here. This is Senator Paul Mark. In my opinion, a man of the people, and I mean that sincerely. He was not born with a silver spoon in his mouth, and he's worked hard to get to where he is. But that's fine and that's nice, but you know what? Every day I really believe in my heart, because I've been with – I think I did his first interview at the old Taconic.
You did.
he's never let me down. He's always swinging the bat for the people. So with that, and I will leave you with what me saintly Irish mother would say when things went wrong. An ill wind blows some good fate.
Yeah, true.
And I think we're heading into some, well, strong winds. But we'll be – I want to thank you all. Stay tuned. We got another about 28 minutes with Senator Mark, and there's much more to talk about. We are a nation going through some issues. That's fair to say.
Yes.
A change in administration, basically a change in our overall philosophy of things. I just was reading they're bringing back some of the old names of the military forts. Mm. I don't disagree with that. A lot of the people who went to these forts, Bragg and all of those, that's how they relate back to their service. But I would like to thank you. Stay tuned. Please stay tuned. And for the people who I'm driving crazy now, we will take we're going to go to our break. I will sing Irish songs till we get to it, but I don't want them to lose their license. This is WTBR 89.7 FM on your radio dial. And we are simulcasting on PCTV from the beautiful, outstanding Taconic High School studios. And I want to personally thank all the kiddos and Mr. Choquette, the teacher, great guy, And the kids, students, because I got yelled at before for saying kids, students, they came in early to get this thing up and running. And I also want to thank Senator Mark for making the trip from the hinterlands to here. We shall be right back. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
This is Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms. Customized solutions available. Online at sondrini.com.
At Pittsfield Community Television, we have a saying: anyone can learn to create television. With the support of trained production staff, we can teach you how to professionally operate a camcorder, use editing software to tell a story, work as a team in a production studio, and take those skills into the community. If you've been curious as to how video production works, we'd love to have you as a member. Visit us online at pittsfieldtv.org or call us at 445-4234 for more information.
Checking local air quality can be as simple as checking your forecast, so you'll know if you're good to go or if you might need to limit your outdoor activities. Visit airnow.gov online or download the app to your phone for real-time air quality index reports, or visit breatheeasyberkshires.org to see real-time readings from air quality monitors set up across Pittsfield and learn more about how air quality affects your health. Breathe Easy Berkshires is a program of Berkshire Environmental Action Team.
Hey, this is Mike Pezzo. Remember those tunes your parents told you to turn down? Better yet, remember those tunes your grandparents told your parents to turn down? Well, on Mike's Amazing Music and Oldies show, you'll hear sometimes oldies, sometimes blues, sometimes local performers, and a lot of rock on Berkshire County's only rock station, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, Thursdays at noon. Tune in and be entertained and educated.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
Back. It's a good-looking guy you see right there. His name is Paul Mark. He's my guest today, and we honestly will be. We had the first half hour. We've really addressed some things, I think, as adults, and not with emotion, with logic. We understand the, and I don't want to put words in the senator's mouth, but he's very cognizant. We got a heck of a debt, and we got to start addressing it. I think we both, would it be safe to say, Senator, that we're approaching it, but we want to approach it from a debt reduction, but also let's take in the human piece too.
Yeah, so I've never been like one of these deficit hawks, like say like Rand Paul that and it cut everything.
Yeah,
you know, that's not the answer either.
No,
I think where I am is it's been growing for a long time. I think there's been two balanced budgets since the 60s, and we're at a point now where the conservative, in quotes, party is in power, which is who you would expect to rein in some spending. And,
right.
And essentially the bill they're working on, though, is actually going to make the deficit much worse. And so then the problem with that is it stymies the ability to take on future programming. It ties future administrations.
Yeah.
And it puts us in a position where, God forbid, there is an actual national emergency. The reason, like, Washington is allowed to have an out-of-balance budget is because if there's war, if there's pandemics, you have to be able to have the flexibility to spend and to get us through these crises. And if our debt becomes the credit rating of the United States was downgraded slightly for the first time, I don't know in how long, in centuries, decades, that's troubling. And the reason we're able to sustain the debt as it is because the dollar is a reserve currency. And people that don't know what that means is you can use the dollar as a stable, reliable source of money no matter where you are in the world. So if you're in Ukraine or Turkey and you have a pile of $100 bills, like, you know that's good. It's like gold.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say. It's the successor to gold bars.
Yeah, yeah. So if we damage that, if we alienate allies, and we offer different countries, rival countries, the opportunity to challenge us for that financial position, now you're calling into question a lot of what we've been able to do, and It's not a good thing. The reason the United States has been so successful, I mean, there's a lot of reasons, a lot of ingenuity and diversity and good people and good education. But there's also this stability that we have secure neighbors. We aren't at war with our neighbors for over 150, 160 years.
Right.
We have an ocean that separates us from the troublemakers, in quotes. And, you know, we have a stable financial system ever since the Depression ended that attracts investment. And so all of these things are what helps make the United States that beacon on the hill, you know, did Reagan call us? A tower on the hill or something like that?
Light
on the tower, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But that gleaming light that attracts people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and you know, I've been fortunate in my lifetime. I've been all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been to a place where if people say, boy, I wish I could live in America. Boy, and their own country was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there is this draw that America is the light of the on top of the hill or somewhere.
It's something good.
I'm getting a lot like Reagan. I can't remember where I'm at. But going forward, and here's what I find, and you please jump on me with both feet. We have become complacent.
Mm-hmm.
We have become complacent, and all of our workings, and I just look at my own life, the criminal justice system, youthful offenders, juvenile delinquents, that all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're not addressing the 21st century kids that are having issues. We are addressing the 1950 kids,
right. Okay?
You got to get an education. How about he's got to get a place to live? And I think maybe this is a good kick in the pants for us.
Maybe.
You know, I'm not saying we're going to enjoy it, but I'm thinking, you know, we become complacent. We've been the big dog on the street. And maybe we should reassess all of our values, where we're at, what is important. You know, we got to knock down the debt. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, listen, we didn't build a debt overnight.
Right.
Let's take a nice bite out of it, but in a bite every time.
Mm-hmm.
But to just put thousands of people on the street with, you know, I remember when when factories would shut down, mm-hmm. they'd have transition places.
Yes. Yes.
This guy just said, oh, by the way, your computer shut off, hit the door, we got your key.
Yeah, that's that whole transitional thing. Like you need time, and you mentioned, like, if you're overseas or you need time to wind things down, you need time for your family to be able to adjust, and then potentially you need training. And again, back to not to dwell on my story forever, but like that's what killed my family was if you worked in a warehouse for 15 years and you're 40-something, you don't have a lot of skills that like transfer. So the training that was offered back then to retrain the workforce was really inadequate in the 90s and late 80s. So we're trying to do a better job with that. And with community college now being free and with the Reconnect program, if you're over 25, you go back and get these degrees, finish what you started. Like in Massachusetts, there's a lot of opportunity right now to try to get retrained. I don't know that that's true around the country. But to like the underlying issue, it goes back to even like why do we have town meeting in Massachusetts? Because in the 1600s, when there was no telecommunication, transportation was like foot or horse, there's no running water, people couldn't read and write, the way you had to govern was through a very direct democracy, limited to your town. And, you know, there's still a beauty in having that today, but the underlying theme, I think, is because something worked in 1652 doesn't mean it's the right way to go in 2025. And the role I have this session, I'm chair of tourism and arts again.
Excellent.
Which it is. It's good. And it comes with the 250th anniversary of the revolution. And like the parallels are striking. And if you just forget about today, but you look back to the 1760s and 1770s, and you look what was happening in Massachusetts, you look at the complaints, you read the Declaration of Independence, right? But you read more than just the preamble. You read that second page of the grievances, and it's things that are about trade and about taxes and about deportation and tariffs. Yeah, exactly.
We've come a long way, baby.
Who's being charged with crimes? And like those grievances from Massachusetts lead us to declare independence and then become the Bill of Rights, you know, and like think about, that's stood up for 240 years. But you're right that you can never take that for granted. Right. That if you stop knowing what the Constitution says, if you stop understanding why it says these things, and if you stop being willing to put in the effort, even just whether it's to vote or to write a letter to the editor or to email or call your elected officials, like the second someone like me, if the governor proposes something and I don't get a bunch of emails saying it's bad, I assume people think this is a good idea.
Right.
So the second you stop participating,
exactly,
is the second things go wrong.
I want to go back a half a block.
Yeah.
You said something, and I believe you've corrected it, not you, but the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to start teaching civics again.
Yes.
I can't tell you. I mean, when I heard, we ought to start teaching Latin again, too. Well, no, but he reads a dollar bill. But we need to know, you know, they spend it. They don't read it. But I'm a big believer in that because I had civics when I was, I had John Adams and Jefferson were in my class. But when I went to D.C. and worked on D.C. and actually saw civics in action, and I like to say my time there was the Gilded Age. Congressman O'Neill and President Reagan. And it seemed to me that while there were parties, there wasn't a serious dividing line. Well, he's a Democrat, and he said we should vote for low taxes. I'm not voting for that.
Yes.
I mean, we got to get by that.
Yeah.
And the other piece, I really believe if people understand civics, then they'll understand it's important to let your legislator know you're for or against that.
Yes.
And I think and a word out to legislators and politicians everywhere. It's not about the party. It's about another P, the people.
No, it's true. And in 2018, we passed a law in Massachusetts bringing civics back in.
Yes.
And I'm really happy.
I am too.
I've been getting emails from eighth graders all over the region. And it didn't work out, but kids from Southern Berkshire, they're going to have me in next year. I wanted to go in this year, but just the timing didn't work out. And just, you know, to get involved and show them they sent me these emails and I replied to them, but there's a school block because they're only in eighth grade.
Yeah.
And so none of them got their answers. And so I wrote to the teacher and I'm like, hey. And
Yeah,
they invited me to like this drone presentation. Yeah. But I couldn't go. But so we're going to do it next year. But also I get the great opportunity every summer, and it's happening right now, to teach a class at MCLA called Civics in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And it intended initially for either teachers or aspiring teachers to – you know, pick up maybe some pointers from a firsthand practitioner. Obviously, not on how to teach, but on some things in civics that maybe they're not looking at, and maybe build a relationship with me so that we can help in the classroom. But you're absolutely right. If you don't know the difference between me and Elizabeth Warren,
right,
then you're already like that step behind. That you know either of us exists puts you a little bit ahead of many people. But
don't know. Some people don't know even know that.
No.
We as a nation have to set aside some of our personal things. You know, that's not good for me.
Yeah.
But it may be good for 4,000 other people.
Right.
And I know when I was down there, you know. Silvio Conti, you know, what a great man. He was a man like yourself of the people. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he called it. Well, I remember there's pictures of him around. You probably can still get them on. He came down on the floor of the house with a pig's nose on, do away with the pork.
Which is amazing because that man brought back more to this district than anyone I can.
And now they want to take his building away. You know, come on.
It's like, look at all the things named Conti.
Hey, I got to call Trump and tell him, you know, he was a Republican, even though he was from Massachusetts.
Right.
But, you know, my parents were dyed-in-the-wool Democrats, but we voted for Conti every time.
Of course.
Because what you just said. But what. We fix government by what we're saying with this civics. Mm-hmm. Let people understand. I don't think a lot of people – I think there's a span when they stopped to now when they started. The people really don't understand the workings of government. I've interviewed people on this show that didn't – oh, I don't know that. Oh,
right.
Why doesn't he just – the Senate can't appropriate money. The House has to appropriate.
Right.
Well, why can't they do it? I don't know. It's the way it was written. Well, they should be able to do it. That's your opinion.
Yeah,
exactly. They're like belly buttons. Everybody has one.
There's 7 million of us in Massachusetts. Yeah. If every one of us got all of our way, it would be really difficult.
Chaos.
Well, and so I do this in my class. I do just like as a silly example.
Yeah.
I do, okay, we're going to now decide what we're having for dinner. And you know what I mean? And when you got 15 students like picking out, it's not that easy, is it, to come up with one product for everybody that works for everybody. And then the longer term project, I hope if you're in my class at MCLA, don't pay attention to what I'm about to say. The longer term project is I have them all come up with an idea, right? And they go through this discussion board group project that – they're going to narrow it down to one. And in the past, if they as a class develop an idea that is good enough, I file it for real.
Oh, cool.
In the real legislature.
Yeah.
So like the students in the first class I did at MCLA back in 2018, like they got components on vocational education that actually became part of the education.
Oh, wow.
So like, you know, just because guess what? If you chat with a couple of people, one out of 10 generally has a good idea that other people buy into. So like that's what democracy is collaborate and talk and it was also interesting to me that every time I do this, whether it's in person or online, inevitably the students take a pragmatic approach and I ask like some of them, so why did you abandon your idea? And they're like, well, I didn't, but I knew this was the thing we could actually make happen. And I say, exactly.
Compromise.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Or not used in the greater Potomac area. But, you know, I've said this publicly, and I mean it. If the federal government would work with the efficiency of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts government, yes, it's heavy to the D side. But, you know what? They communicate with each other.
Yeah.
And they're not – no one down there said, oh, I'm going to vote for that because that Mark, he's a Democrat.
Right.
Because – and we got to get by this. We have to get by this.
Yeah.
And this division concerns me very deeply. I kid around a lot, you know. I like to use humor to get points across because anger doesn't work. But what's going on in L.A. and other cities, those are red flags to me, that there are problems much deeper than the surface stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's definitely real issues and real concerns. And when there's legitimate policy differences, it's fine to advocate vigorously, right?
Right. That's the debate for your – stand for your principles, but understand – your principles may not always be 100% correct. I mean,
that's the thing is sometimes there's something for all of us to learn listening to someone else and hearing their perspective. And that's where, we look at Congress and it's 435 House members and 100 senators and think of the diverse, the states, the districts they represent in terms of both population, ethnicity, languages spoken, but also Hawaii is a tropical set of islands, and we're cold in the winter, and Arizona's the desert. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of difference in how we live, and then now the way people can move so easily, there's almost a self-selection beyond even weather. There's a self-selection. I'm going to move where I think people think like me as well, and in some ways, there's a benefit to that, but in some other ways, it's making us interact less with people that are different than ourselves. And so when we talk about like diversity being important, that also includes diversity of opinion, diversity of knowledge, and the willingness to learn from someone else. Like segregation is bad no matter what.
Exactly. When my grandfather moved up here, he was attacked. Because no Irish need apply.
Yep, exactly.
And so to think it's just like one group, no, a lot of groups have gone through it. Yep. We can evolve as a people.
Right.
But we have to work.
Right.
And I applaud you. You've always been a standard bearer for working together. You should thank your professors and your mom, and yourself. Mm-hmm. You're the guy that stayed up at night studying.
Right.
You know, while you worked. But what you are is you bring in me, my opinion, and I hope this doesn't get you in trouble, civility, intelligence, and the ability to negotiate and compromise.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't have those, if it's, that's a cell phone and I'm not going to change it.
Well, I saw Biden was using a cell phone, so now I can't use a cell phone again.
Right, yeah.
I was like, please stop.
Or he had notes. I have notes right here. I jump them all around. They're the two gangsters, my grandchildren. But seriously, for these students that are here too and the people watching, let's not fall on our sword for everything, because there may be an easier way, and falling on your sword is very painful.
When I go to Boston, I talk a lot about rural issues, and I talk a lot about how different our area is. Like, people were texting me because they saw the town of Peru voted to allow guns in town hall.
My wife brought that to my attention. I said, well, we'll move to Peru.
But I explained it to people. It was actually a thing I helped get into the law, because towns like Peru and the town of Hawley specifically said, you know, we don't have a police department.
Right.
And there's money in the town hall. So it's actually the person that works there wants to have a legal
gun.
And that kind of thing. And so the towns get to opt in or out. But it's things like that that are just like, they're so different. And you have to bring them to people's attention down in Boston. But if that was the only thing I ever talked about, if I refused to listen to, well, the subway in Boston needs money too. And, you know, there's sea rising, sea level change in Plymouth.
Yeah.
If I didn't listen to any of that, no one's going to listen to me.
Right.
So you make your argument and it's number one, but you have to be able to work with other people and listen to other people. So that's why, like, I don't see how Congress can be functional unless they go back to that I am here for my district, but I want all 535 districts to get something better, because we're better off if Louisiana has better education as well. Yeah. Like as a country, our military is going to be better. Yeah. Our workforce, our economic opportunity, like it's all good. I know you went to Eisenhower because I saw you when I was driving. Yes. I went the same night as you.
Oh, was that amazing?
It was really good.
I mean, I was mesmerized. I was absolutely sad when it ended. I said, you can't end this. This is too good.
No, that man having that much dialogue. Yes. Like I can't imagine how he did it. Remember?
Yeah. But I can't remember where I parked the car, and he remembered 90 minutes of dialogue.
It's unreal. But like all the things that, as President Eisenhower was saying, and like building the highway system, like it's like, no, that's important because it matters how the whole country succeeds.
The vision, the open. Yeah. I'm sorry. The open vision. Yeah. We got about a minute left. Mm-hmm. I do want to thank you for coming on. And you know what you say to my St. Irish mother once again had the saying, the good Lord gave you two ears and one mouth. Think about it.
Right.
But thank you so much for coming.
Of course.
Thank to everybody in this studio, the students, Mr. Choquette, the Scoop ladies that met me when I came in, my escort. I thank you for coming. I think they've because of your visit, they're better off. They see a real life person who makes changes in all our lives. Mm-hmm. But thinks about it, and they're unique. I'm just saying. listen, folks, I do want to thank Senator Mark. He's I consider him not only a wonderful representative of all of ours, but also I consider him a friend. And I just couldn't be prouder of him. And like I said, we had our first interview many years ago when he was running for the House, and he won, and he represented us wonderfully from there. So that said, God bless. Today, help lift somebody's burden. Make them smile. Not everybody's got an easy path. We're all in this together. Help each other. We gain nothing by being mean or hateful. Believe me when I tell you. Thanks for watching. Stay tuned. See you soon. Take care. Thanks.